From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of January 2014. It's USDA Report Day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and this morning's USDA reports with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll also take them up and the impact on the cash grain market with Ben Pruce from the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility. And, as usual, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is USDA Report Day.
Support comes from Country Financial. Country Financial is hosting farm information sessions throughout Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates to the federal crop insurance program, the farm bill, and how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. Registration information is on their crop update website at countrycrop.com/update.
Well, let's check the numbers as they changed on this USDA report day in Chicago, Illinois. At the CME Group, the nearby soft red winter wheat finished the March at $5.69. That was down 15 and a quarter. July at 5.80 and 3/4, down 13 and a half for the day. The hard red July down 13 cents or 12 and 3/4 cents at $6.20 and a quarter. March corn futures up 19 and 3/4 at $4.31 and 3/4. The May at $4.40 and 3/4 up 20 and a half. And July corn $4.44 and a half, up 16 and 3/4. September at $4.52 and 3/4, 18 and a half cents higher. December corn, $4.58 and a quarter, that's up 17. The March contract at $4.67 and 3/4, finished 15 and 3/4 higher. January beans at $13.03 and 3/4 of a cent, finished 7 and a half higher. The March at $12.78 and a half, up 4 and 3/4. In May, soybeans at $12.60, up 5 cents for the day. July at $12.46, up 5 and a half, and November beans at $10.99 and 3/4, finished a penny and a quarter lower on the afternoon. Bean meal at $4.35.20, up $2.20, and the bean oil at $37.95, 21 cents higher. Live cattle futures from the CME Group in the February at $136.70, up 15 cents for the day. April at $136.97 and a half, up a dime. January feeders at $168.65, 50 cents lower. The March at $167.65, down $1.17 and a half. And the lean hogs finished the February is at $85.82 and a half, up 57 and a half cents. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org, right there on the internet. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, February contract, $92.64 a barrel, up 98 cents. Gasoline in the wholesale, the RBOB at $2.67 and a tenth, 2 8/10 of a cent higher. Ethanol futures at $1.96 and 3/10, up 3 8/10. And RBOB to ethanol spread at 70 8/10 of a cent. That's just about 9 10 of a cent narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas in the February at $4.06 and 3/10, up 5 8/10 of a cent. And diesel fuel at $2.94 and 3/10, 2 1/10 of a cent higher. Gold futures at $1,246.90 an ounce, up $17.50. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area today shows us that we should continue to have rainy skies for the afternoon. Thunderstorms also possible. Those will come after 4 o'clock. Patchy fog, a high of 41 this afternoon. South-southeast winds at 17 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 24 this afternoon. And then tonight, occasional rain, possibly a thunderstorm before 1 a.m., then a chance of rain. Patchy fog again this evening. We'll go to a low of just 28. Chance of rainfall this evening instead of 100%. Saturday, a 20% chance of rain before 7 a.m. in the morning. Mostly cloudy, a high of 78. West-southwest winds at about 18 miles an hour. And then Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 24. On a west wind at 11 to 17 miles an hour. Mostly sunny skies with a high of 44 degrees on Sunday and breezy south winds at 10 to 15. At the bottom of the half hour, we'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast. Meteorologist Ed Kieser will join us.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Friday afternoon. We always talk with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. I've had a very busy day, Mike. I was in Springfield this morning at the first Corn and Soybean Classic Series for the year. That, of course, should have been the third one, but we didn't manage to get out on Monday or Tuesday because of the cold weather. What a difference a few days makes, not only in the weather, Mike, but also in what's been happening in the marketplace today as well. The USDA reports were due out at 11 o'clock this morning. Why don't you go through those numbers for me, please?
Well, I think the big numbers were probably the U.S. ending stocks, Todd. We came in with a surprise to the downside in terms of supply, obviously, with the corn of 1.63 billion bushels. That's versus just under 1.8 last month. Wheat ending stocks bigger than trade estimates, bigger than the highest trade estimate as well, 608 million bushels last month had been 575 million. Beans a little bit more neutral, 150 million bushels posted today versus 150 last month. And that is pretty much on the upper end of the trade guesses. When you break down the 22 estimates by Reuters, it was right in the upper middle part of the range for the U.S. numbers. Global stocks numbers were quite a bit different. We had a much bigger wheat number, a little bit bigger bean number, and a bit smaller, quite a bit smaller corn number as well. Interesting in the wheat and corn feed numbers, big distinctions there. Feeding in the United States and the world for corn went up on USDA's report at the expense of U.S. wheat feeding and global wheat feeding going down in the report today. So those are kind of the highlights. The grain stocks report, mostly friendly for the corn, neutral for the beans, neutral, mostly neutral to maybe a little bit weaker for the wheat as well.
We took it on the chin at least for a while today, and they did post in the nearby contract a pretty sharp outside down month. July futures were down but did not manage to post an outside down. Which of these commodities did you spend most of the time looking at after the fact, trying to analyze just what happened to it?
Well, I think most of the calls came after the report because of the corn, with clients wondering how high the corn could move and whether this was a low in the corn market, and it was it time to go ahead and sell some cash corn or buy back some of the light sales that have been made here during the month of December, or last month, I guess it was, during December. And so I think we focused mostly on the corn. The wheat and the corn continue to be attached. It's funny, in this post-report environment after the close, I was just sitting here and I had two questions pop in my mind, and it's kind of similar to last month's report, Todd. How high could the corn have moved had it not been for the bearish wheat number, and how low could wheat have taken the corn had it not been for the friendly corn number? And so these two futures markets continue to work with each other, and in the case of the numbers today, work against each other. But if you're going to get a substantial rally in the corn futures, I think you still need the wheat on your side.
So you don't have the wheat on your side at the moment, though, right?
You do not have the wheat on your side. The one thing that I will say is that the planting numbers, the winter wheat seedings number, was not negative at all, just under 41.9 million acres total. Trade estimates averaged 43.5. Some had it up to 44.5. Big decline versus last year in soft red wheat. So that could be potentially more corn acres, but maybe that's down the road here in another couple weeks or a month or so before the trade starts to think about that. But I think the winter wheat acres and the seedings report today maybe could be a launch pad or a jumping off point for trying to carve out a low in the wheat market. We did get news after the market closed that Egypt is in tendering for U.S. wheat and also a combination of U.S. and other wheat. That's always kind of a nice thing to see after a report comes out.
Let's go through the supply demand tables in particular. We'll start with the corn, where they adjusted for the old crop corn, harvested acres, and the yield. Harvested acres went up and yield went down.
Yes, and I think this is where, you know, as an analyst that has been talking about the difference between the Western Corn Belt and the Eastern Corn Belt, not only did I have a monkey on my back, but I had Godzilla and King Kong on my back. And I didn't have much faith that the USDA would come in and lower the ending stocks down to levels that made sense to me. And so I do think USDA did see the distinction between the Western and Eastern Corn Belt, because they also put some new records, new fresh record yields posted today versus December in the report as well in the Eastern Corn Belt. So to take the yield from 160.4 down to 158.8, I believe it was, it did take quite a bit of yield decline in the Western Corn Belt. So that, along with the feed demand and the ethanol demand increase totaling 150 million bushels, essentially took the trade from thinking we had a 2 billion bushel corn crop, expecting that at the end of today, down to a 1.6. So you've got about 400 million bushels the trade's off on at this point, as far as how I see it and what I talked to with people in Chicago after the report came out.
Well, it changed a couple of things beyond that. So let's start with this beginning stocks number, because it didn't change very much. Harvested acres changed, yield changed, but beginning stocks went from 824 to 821, so they didn't really change too much there. Total production for the year went from 13,989 to 13.9 $2.5 billion.
Yes, that's right. And so you didn't get a lot of change when it came to the actual production, because you had 500,000 acres increased in harvested acres. But I think it does point to the idea that, A, we did have some yield problems in the West because they posted record yields in the Eastern Corn Belt. So you could have seen that 160.4 go up to 161 or 161.5 had it not been for some declines in the West. And I think, again, we are seeing with the feeding and the ethanol that these low prices are really stimulating demand, and I think that that's what really boiled down, because of what you talk about in the actual production and beginning stocks figures, not much change, but by the time you drill down through the numbers, quite a bit of difference.
Well, it may have done some stimulating, but feed and ethanol up 50 million, but feed and residual, what did they do there?
They went up 100 million,
so you think that's right?
Yeah, I do, because they took it out of the wheat, and I think we were running pretty hard on the wheat. And I would also say that the hog producers out there and the poultry producers out there are feeling pretty good. Other than PED virus, they're feeling pretty good about the future. And so I do think, given the sow prices, given the feeder pig prices, we do have increasing feed at this point.
And the export market for corn?
Well, the last 2 weeks have been dismal, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. And so you really want to get back to a pre-holiday type pace, and you want to try and get away from the GMO corn issue with the other buyers out there, so we don't have to rely upon as much China. And certainly USDA did juggle the numbers today and take Chinese corn production up, took their imports down 2 million. I want to think that that's mostly pounded into the numbers here because of this GMO corn issue that we've been fighting for, what, now 3 weeks. So I think the big battle with corn futures will continue to be the wheat market. And yet, by the same token, these ending stocks numbers and these grain stocks numbers maybe make the Argentine weather more important next week when we come back.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzulos with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting joins us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Well, farmers in Illinois are soon to find a new weed in their fields. I'll have more in a moment on how the bane of the South is making its way northward. Just a couple of quick things. If you have not yet signed up for our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event, I urge you to pick up the phone and make a phone call, or to just go to our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Get signed up now. We'll close that off the 15th. Voices of Illinois Agriculture, more on it. It's a fundraising event for the College of ACES, what we think of as one of our signatures event for W-I-L-L-A-G.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The question at hand, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager, is not if, but when and where Palmer amaranth will show up in Illinois fields. Maybe more importantly, how much damage will it do to the yield of a growing crop? He wrote about it in the Bulletin Online. The Bulletin is Illinois' Crop Science and Extension Outreach webpage. He notes, research done by Adam Davis, USDA ARS plant ecologist at the University of Illinois, has examined these questions. Results demonstrate there are few landscape-level barriers to the establishment of Palmer amaranth populations in Illinois, and that these populations, once established, are competitive with crop species. In other words, these results indicate that it's not a question of if Palmer amaranth will become established in Illinois, but rather when and where it will become established. Well, for the past two seasons, weed scientists at the U of I and at Southern Illinois have conducted surveys, field and laboratory, to determine where in Illinois Palmer amaranth now occurs. It shows up at about a quarter of the 102 counties. All but one of these is west of the Illinois River. However, they stretch from Chicago to Cairo, and the weed is quite likely in many other counties, but simply not accounted for, at least yet. Similar to female water hemp plants, female Palmer amaranth plants produce a whole lot of seeds. These small black little seeds are easily moved within the field and between fields in a whole myriad of ways, including on harvesting and tillage equipment. Now, if a farmer can identify Palmer amaranth in one or more fields, Hager has the following suggestions to keep it from moving. 1. Fields with Palmer amaranth population should be the last fields planted next spring. 2. Mark or flag the areas where the Palmer amaranth plants have produced seeds. These areas should be intensely scouted the following season and an aggressive Palmer amaranth management plan implemented to prevent further seed production. 3. Fields in which Palmer amaranth seeds were produced should not be tilled. Leaving the seeds near the soil surface increase the opportunities for seed predation by various granivores. It's not too early to begin planning an integrated Palmer amaranth management program, writes Hager online. He believes an integrated herbicide program should include soil residual herbicides applied at full recommended use rates within 2 weeks of planting and followed by post-emergence herbicides applied before Palmer amaranth plants exceed just 3 inches in height. Most herbicides that control water hemp also control Palmer amaranth, but successful long-term management of Palmer amaranth in Illinois will likely require a whole lot more than herbicides. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business, so Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ben Pruce is on the phone line. He's at the Andersons in Everly, Iowa. Good afternoon to you, Ben. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What did you and the folks there in Everly think about this morning's USDA report?
Well, we're glad we have some puts that are going to expire worthless, hopefully. Honestly, the report, a little anxiety for about everybody because all of our farmers seem to be long corn out here, just much like the rest of the United States. And the only skepticism was everybody was in the same camp, and sure enough, here we are, finished up 20 on corn. So,
Are your bids going to reflect the change in this very much?
A little bit, you know. The processors out here have been reluctant to climb on basis. You know, we touched base last week. We were looking at like a 15 over.
Mm-hmm.
Touching base with them here this afternoon. They're already at a 10 over. So looking for reasons to walk her down here.
And they're looking for reasons. Are they able to find them? So the question is, are producers actually letting go of grain and they're able to back this off, or they just don't want to pay that much for it?
You know, honestly, at the end of the day, it's, I think this report scared quite a few guys. So our processors maybe got another month of coverage on their hands. But, with the corn price rallying here, you know, at, almost 430 cash, that does something for a few guys. But, for the majority, I think everybody sits tight for a minute. looking for the 450 cash range.
Well, on the other hand, I suppose 1.6 isn't all that tight.
No. It's still robust, and I don't think this is the end of the story coming into 2014. But for once in a couple of years, it's nice not to have a limit move today.
What are your bids for the day?
We're 426 cash corn and 1242 cash beans.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Pruce is with the Andersons, joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. We talk to Ben or somebody out there at the Andersons each and every Friday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
I'm Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now directly to the USDA reports during our Commodity Week program, which will air immediately following this program on our home radio station at willag.org, and will be up on the website at about 4 o'clock this afternoon. We'll talk with Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I. He's in studio already. I thought we probably ought to bring him into the conversation. Good afternoon to you, Daryl.
Good afternoon, Todd.
A quick summary of what you saw at the USDA's number.
Well, I think probably the most important number in what we got today was the December 1 stocks number for corn. That number implied we had record level of feed and residual use of corn during the first quarter of the marketing year. It's not a logical number. It's not a believable number. And when we saw the WASDE report, they did fade that number. If you took that at face value, I think you would have feed and residual use for the year at about 5.8 billion bushels. And we recognize we're not going to do that. So WASDE folks raised the feed and residual number a bit, but certainly not fully in line with the December 1 stocks number. I think given the history the last 3 or 4 years on the stocks number, we need to be a little cautious about what we might find in upcoming stocks on March 1 and June 1.
Yes, the March and these three numbers, the December 1, the March 1, and June 1, tend to move a whole lot.
What we found is they move a lot and they tend to reverse. So when you get a surprise in one report, you tend to reverse that in the next report. So I think March will be an exciting time to read.
I was so busy today. I saw the 100 million change in the WASDE. What was the grain stocks feed and residual usage? What was the usage for feed?
For the first quarter, it was 2.4 billion bushels. And if you look at similar years when we've had big crops and when we expect to have limited wheat feeding in the summer months, first quarter use has been about 40% of the total for the year. So really, if you took this at face value, you'd say 6 billion bushels is what we're going to feed this year, which is not a believable number, and certainly WASDE didn't forecast that. So I think it suggests that we should take the December 1 stocks number with a grain of salt and not be surprised if we see a surprise in the opposite direction on March 1.
Daryl, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again during Commodity Week. Daryl Good is an ag economist from the University of Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Again, we'll join us for Commodity Week. For those of you listening to the home station at WILL AM 580, stay with us. Daryl will be back. For the rest of you, you can always pick it up off willag.org about 4 o'clock this afternoon. We'll be back here nonetheless very shortly with a look at the weather forecast. Meteorologist Ed Kieser will be here, and I'll have the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
It's National Bittersweet Chocolate Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1839, Indian tea became available in Britain for the first time. Up until this date, only tea from China was available, and that was very expensive. The development and import of Indian tea brought the price down so all could afford it, and it quickly became the national drink in Britain. In 1922, Thomas Edison was issued a patent for a storage battery electrode and production of the same. In 1969, the final issue of the Saturday Evening Post appeared after 147 years of publication. It returned in limited publication years later. Over the years, the magazine featured a number of covers dealing with agriculture, including The Boys and Pests in 1932, The Victory Garden in 1943, and Home Gardens in 1951. In 1984, Wendy's Where's the Beef ad campaign began. And in 2004, Norman Heatley died. An American doctor, he solved the problem of extracting penicillin from its mold, paving the way for its mass production. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
Let's check in on the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago as they finished up on this Friday afternoon. Nearby March corn at 4.33 for the high, the low at 4.06 1/4, settlement price at 4.31 3/4, and finished 8 1/4 higher. December corn at 4.58 1/2. The change on the week, up 6 1/4, both of those are outside weekly up changes. January beans 13.20, the high, the low at 12.87 1/4. Settlement price at $13.03 3/4, up 14.5. November beans, on the other hand, were down 30 cents on the week at $10.99 3/4 cents, settling, of course, below $11. January bean meal at $4.35.20, up $10.70. January bean oil at $37.95, that finished down 39. Wheat futures at $6.12 3/4 for their high, the low at $5.60 1/2. Settlement price at $5.69, down 36 3/4, posted an outside down week. July at $5.80 3/4 on the weekly change, down 33 3/4. February live cattle at $136.70, up 40. The March at $167.65, up 45. And the February lean hogs today at $85.82 1/2 were down 85 cents. Now here's Ed Kieser, meteorologist, with a look at the South American weather forecast.
Dryness is quickly becoming a bigger concern in parts of both Argentina and Brazil as we head into the middle of the Southern Hemisphere summer. In Argentina, as expected, hot and dry weather prevailed much of this past week, with a cold front arriving to finish the week with favorably cooler temperatures. Showers and thunderstorms with that front focused on central production areas, leaving important corn and soybean areas to the south, including Buenos Aires, La Pampa, and southern Cordoba, with little to no rainfall. Now another week without rain is expected there. Moisture deficits since the beginning of December are generally 3 to 5 inches and growing. And with high heat returning next week, further stress to reproductive crops is expected. Almost half of the corn and soybeans grown in Argentina is exposed to this excessive dryness. The other dry area is across the northern production areas of Brazil, especially the states of Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia. Hot and dry weather should continue in these areas through at least next week. While dryness is benefiting double-cropped areas as first crop harvesting and second crop planting is underway, it is becoming quite stressful for the crops in the vegetative and reproductive stage. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are expected to bring some rain in the coming week to parts of neighboring Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Sao Paulo, but even there, moisture deficits are growing. The part of South America in the best shape continues to be across southern Brazil, Paraguay, and northern Argentina. Periodic showers and thunderstorms are expected to continue there in the coming week.
That is Ed Kieser, meteorologist, joins us here on Illinois Public Media to take a look at the South American weather forecast. Don't forget, you can always find us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.